The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
With more Americans living longer, the study of our aging population continues to be an important research area. At UW-Milwaukee, much of that work is being done through the Center for Aging and Translational Research. It's a place that brings together multiple disciplines to provide a more unified and strategic response to understanding the aging process. On this edition of UWM Today, we learn more about the center and some of the new ways that experts are using to connect our knowledge of aging and the steps that can be taken to make our golden years more satisfying and fulfilling. Joining us in the studio is Scott Strath. Scott is the interim director of the Center for Aging and Translational Research. Welcome, Scott. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're such a young-looking guy here, and you're studying the aging process. What brought you to this field of study?
Really, a lifetime of working and observing people as they get older, and just with the realization that people are living longer and we need to be able to have individuals live longer, fruitful, more engaged lives. So really, a multitude of different things, but that's the main thing is, you know, as we get older, I would like to make sure when I retire that I'm able to be functionally aware, mentally sharp, and just having a good time.
20, 30, 40 years ago, was there this sort of attention or focus placed on aging? I don't remember when I was a kid and growing up that anybody talking much about trying to figure out what happens when we get old. It just seemed to happen.
Yeah, and I think you can really attribute that to a changing social landscape. So if you think about way back 1900, about 3 million adults over the age of 65. Then fast forward a century, and it's estimated by 2030 that there'll then be 70 million adults over the age of 65. So with that, obviously, are coming a host of changes, and a lot of people will say that there's actually a crisis on the horizon and that we need to be fully aware of that crisis and have a strategic response to that. And I think with that has come then a heightened awareness that people are getting older, living longer lives, and we need to be prepared for that.
To what degree is the fact that we seem to be aging perhaps better than we did 100 years ago, living healthier, older lives, to what degree is that pushing the research to look at what this aging process is all about?
I think it literally is just that. We, you know, social norms kind of guide what we do, and we are socially guided by when we will marry, when we'll have an education, when we'll have a family, and when we'll retire. But if you consider now that when we retire, we may live for another 30 years or so, that's exactly the study of what those years entail, that really what is given a heightened awareness to aging itself. And really, are we prepared for that? A more mature workforce. We have greater need for services, healthcare, and the list goes on in essence.
So do researchers have a good sense of what old is? When do you become old these days?
That's an excellent question. Chronologically, we're getting older every second of every day, right? But I don't think there's different classifications. Are you older when you're over 55, when you're over 60, when you're over 65? And people will always truncate those numbers. But in essence, a lot of people will look at retirement as that kind of that marker of older age. And then just when you retire, are you financially secure? Are you functionally able to operate independently within society? Are you mentally sharp? And things along those kind of lines. So a lot of people will use different categories, but my own personally would be then looking at retirement as kind of that marker.
And, of course, retirement ages seem to be pushed out a little bit more now. People are talking about seniors, folks over the age of 60, working well into their 60s, and even 70 isn't unusual, is it?
No, not at all. And I think that's a wonderful thing because, you know, individuals have this tremendous resource of information, so they shouldn't hit a magical number and then we can no longer tap into that extensive resources that they have. And a lot of people will say that if we can really utilize that information, learn from that information, still engage and have individuals engage when they're older, then society will be the richer for it.
And individuals are perhaps enjoying those years far much more if they do feel connected to the society that they have been a part of for their first 60 years.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of research and notoriety around the importance of social engagement. You know, if you still feel a worth, if you're still socially engaged, you're likely to be healthier anyway. So it's kind of a win-win situation.
I was with a fellow who's well into his 60s last week, out for dinner with a group of friends, and he retired. Seems to be doing splendidly well, but he said there was this nagging thought in the back of his mind that somehow having ended his professional life, the working career, that people might not treat him the same way because, and this is the word that stuck with me and actually scared me a little bit, he said, "I'm not sure I'll still be relevant to people if I'm not in a career."
That's an excellent question. And really, that's what we need to capitalize on. Clearly, individuals, when they get to a certain age, are still really relevant. And the resource and the information they have, it's just I think we tend to operate in silos and in age silos as well. So once individuals hit a certain age, then you don't want to say they're put out to pasture, but you could say that. And that's just not good for society. Social trends and the social landscape may well be shifting, but we can still take advantage of that rich information that people have as they age.
Well, Scott, let's talk a little bit about the center now. And now that we've laid the foundation for why there is such an emphasis on understanding how we age and how we might age better, what specifically is being done at UW-Milwaukee that is studying these issues, going a little bit deeper than just the surface recognition that we all are adding another year each calendar to passing of the calendar to our odometer.
Yeah. I think the center really is a unique opportunity. It's not uncommon in across many academic campuses within this country, across the world, that you function as independent silos within your discipline. So you're the College of Nursing, you are the School of Social Welfare, you're the College of Health Sciences, you're in the area of economics. So it's not uncommon. So the center was really an opportunity to look at breaking down barriers and working in a synergistic fashion so we could bring all of those disciplines together around a topical area, and that topical area is aging. And clearly, aging is a discipline that's informed by a multitude of different disciplines. So we can learn from one another, and it really gives us a vehicle to learn from one another and do more. And I think attack both education, research, and translation in a multitude of effect across different disciplines. So therefore, we can answer questions that we pose in a more holistic fashion and bring in individual experts from different disciplines really to forward the understanding and the translation of aging.
Because if you're just looking at one aspect of aging and you're so focused, for example, on the economics, did you save enough? Are you going to have that nest egg there? Unless you're thinking of that in relationship to a person's health or a person's social life, you don't really get a full picture of whether or not just having enough money is going to make you happy.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my favorite examples, if you'll indulge me just for a second, is consider the urban planner. So the urban planner will be isolated in the field of urban planning, and they won't know much about, let's say, gerontology or aging. And as they plan an intersection, they'll plan the intersection potentially with a crosswalk, which is the traditional 15 seconds to cross the street. Now, with an understanding of gerontology and an understanding of aging, they will know that's not long enough for an individual who's older to potentially to get across the street. So with that foresight, they will expand the time for that individual to get across the street who may need a little extra time. The ramifications for that, now as a senior who now can cross the street in a safe amount of time, I now may go and visit friends. I'm no longer socially isolated. I'm engaging in more physical activity. More physical activity is promoting more health, less reliance on long-term care providers, and resources. So just that one example of the urban planner knowing that entity of maybe a longer ability to cross the street has a multitude of ramifications. So it really is an excellent opportunity to bring all disciplines together and learn from one another.
One of the other areas that I heard is important for us to consider is the buildings that we are constructing. You know, an apartment or a condo unit might look like, not just at the entryway in, but inside those units, because as you're moving around at the age of 35 or 40, your flexibility is a lot different than perhaps 75 or 80, right?
Yeah, and there's actually a tremendous amount of research looking at architectural design and how that promotes social engagement. It promotes physical activity. And there's a lot of research right now looking at specific design to an older adult population, especially considering the changing demographics and that massive increase in older adults living within society, whether it's independently or in assisted living. It's just trying to promote social engagement, activity, health, mental health, as well as physical as well.
So thinking again about the center at UWM, is this an example where you might have somebody, what, from School of Architecture working with, what would it be, nursing or kinesiology? I mean, you know, some of those areas of or disciplines that look at physical movement?
Exactly. And there's many different examples. I can use some of my own examples as well. A number of years ago, I was looking at how the environment can promote physical activity and health within the elderly. I am, by my training, an expert in the area of physical activity and health, but I do not know a lot about the environment. So I could reach across the aisle and then tap on my colleague's shoulders to really attack that question from an expert from my side of the fence as well as an expert from their side of the fence. And the project was a lot more resourceful, a lot more impactful in terms of our outcomes just by being able to reach across the aisle.
How receptive are faculty in different disciplines to that knock on the door from someone who's from a totally different part of the campus community? In your case, kinesiology, say, connecting with architecture.
Very receptive. It's I think one of the biggest impediments is that it takes time, because we do talk a different language. When people are in their own field, they'll use acronyms, you know, they'll use their own kind of language, and we won't necessarily understand that when we reach across the aisle and start talking to the architects, the urban planners, the arts, the humanities, and things like that. So it takes time, but people are definitely receptive to forwarding, I think, our understanding of aging education, research, and translation.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Great to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Scott Strath. Scott is the interim director of the Center for Aging and Translational Research at UWM, a unit that brings together people from across the campus to take a look at what happens when we get older and how might we make those years. And I don't think we've defined just how old is yet. We might come back to that, Scott. How to make those years as satisfying and as fulfilling as possible. Scott, as we think about the work that you are doing in the center, thinking about aging, when I first heard of the center, I thought, well, you take a look at older folks, you know, people who are up there in years. But as we're engaged in this conversation here in the studio, it occurs to me that younger people in their 30s and 40s, perhaps, should be as interested or as concerned with the discussion of aging, not only because their parents might be in that sector that you folks and your colleagues are studying, but because every one of us is going to be in that category someday.
And that's exactly true. And yeah, you could even go lower, I guess, in many aspects, all the way down to the children that are in an elementary school, is because as everybody ages, people are living longer. There's advances in medical technology. Longevity is increasing. So there will become a time in the next century where there'll be even more older individuals, older adults. So that kind of changing social landscape is pertinent to whether you are 60 now, whether you're 30 now, or whether you're 10 right now. It's going to impact us all.
I know your center is located right here on the UWM campus in the city of Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, in the U.S. But let's pull back a little bit. Let's zoom back and get a sense from you of whether people in other countries around the world are as interested or as intrigued with understanding the aging process as we Americans are, because we Americans love to live right in the right now, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to be here forever. How does the rest of the world address aging issues?
Everyone, a multitude of different countries are studying the impact of aging on society. I think it becomes really interesting because depending upon what the country is or what the cultural background is, aging is looked at maybe in a different way. So it's very common maybe in one culture for the grandparents to be living in the same house as their children and their grandchildren, and that may not be the case maybe in other cultures. But as a topic, as a discipline of aging, it's heightened around the world. It's a hot topic, I think, in many different countries.
So when you go to national or international conferences, you're often speaking the same language.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity as well to bring in experts from other countries. So let's say at the center in UWM campus, let's bring in experts from Scandinavia, from Europe, and learn from some of their experiences and some of their cultural backgrounds so we can escalate our understanding as well.
Are any cultures or countries farther ahead than the U.S. in terms of dealing with these issues of aging?
That's kind of a loaded question. I don't know if further ahead. It's definitely something that's on the horizon for many countries. Maybe there's different aspects of research in different countries, but rather than thinking about different countries being further ahead or further behind, I know myself, I just like to look at the world as one big place that we can learn from one another. And tap into different levels of expertise all around the globe to see if we can forward our understanding for all individuals, not just Americans.
For the last few weeks on the UWM website, uwm.edu, there's been a wonderful story about the use of music in connecting to and perhaps opening up the relationship between the society and people who are losing their cognitive skills. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you could talk a bit about that, since it is also tied into the center's work.
Yeah, it's a co-principal investigator on that study is Professor Jung Kwak, who was in the school, the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. And they, her team are really looking at the impact of music on memory. One of the first studies to really look at empirical evidence about whether music through the use of iPods, for instance, can really decrease the need for pharmaceuticals for depression and anxiety. Can it decrease agitation in individuals that have memory issues? So really, yeah, it's a program that is nationwide. And then UWM and Professor Kwak, through as a center scientist, is looking at the empirical evidence of that to see whether it really has a meaningful impact. And yes, received a lot of notoriety, and it's just a wonderful example of taking a research question and then looking at the translation of that question to get it into the hands of seniors that actually can benefit from its use.
And for our listeners who may not have seen the story, the essence of it is that when you bring familiar music or favorite mm-hmm. music into the ears, literally into the minds of people with dementia or with Alzheimer's, it's like a light bulb goes on, right?
Yeah, it's a connection to the past, if you think. Music and music and songs from the past are always going to bring back memories and things like that. So that's exactly what it's trying to do, is turn that light bulb back on.
When my mother was in a nursing home before she passed, one of the favorite experiences that she and I think her fellow residents at the home had was music time, where mm-hmm. They would bring in the old classics. And as I observed her participating in this class, because my mother was much older, she was listening to Lawrence Welk type music. And I have to admit, as I was standing there and saying, this is so nice, you know, she and all the rest of the residents have indeed come back into the present, because they are totally engaged in this music that was part of their past. And then it dawned on me, 30 years from now, we may all be in that nursing home listening to the Stones mm-hmm. or the Beatles. And so it's not something that is frozen in time. It really is a connection to where you have been in your lifetime and those memories being embedded deep, deep, deep in the mind.
Yeah. And even if you consider, and I'm not an expert in cognition or in Alzheimer's or anything along those lines, but even if you consider yourself, do you listen to a song on the radio in the morning and it brings back an instant memory? You know, I do. Some songs are going to make me a little bit more peppy in the morning. And you can think back when you hear a song that's like, oh, at that time I was in such and such a place, timing my life. So music is it's powerful. And there's a lot of research out there looking at music and its ability to impact health.
And so, well, people, researchers around the country or lay people have seen that light bulb effect occur when older folks begin to listen to the music. The research at UWM is trying to go one step further to measure exactly mm-hmm. what happens in terms of the long-term ability of that music to create a better place for people with memory issues.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. It's the quality of life. It's the impact of all aspects. If you consider the reliance on healthcare services, the need for medications, the lack of social connection, things along those lines. If music is one of those tools that could benefit, it's going to be an enormous benefit to society. And then UWM is one of the first that really to look at the scientific rigorousness of that question.
Scott, some other examples of work being done in the center by scientists across campus?
Lots. We are looking at understanding behavior, understanding sedentary behaviors within seniors. We are looking at disrupting sedentary behavior and its impact on health. Can we promote more physical activity within the community? Can we decrease the prevalence or manage diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease through various modalities? Looking at the neurological aspects of aging, even going as far as looking at whether the iPhone or whether the iPad and the touch is at the same touch for a senior as it is for a younger individual. So how does technology impact long-term care providers, training protocols? The list really goes on in terms of what we're doing. And it's an exciting time to be on the UWM campus and in the area of aging research and education.
Do you bring the scientists or researchers together periodically to compare notes, or is it sort of the process of osmosis where you may discover somebody else across campus doing like-minded research?
The center is new. It's in its infancy, definitely. And that is the goal, is really to reach across the aisle and bring researchers together, pertaining to research as well as education as well, so we can all learn from one another. And then when a question is posed, when we're looking at scientific discoveries, is then to work in multidisciplinary teams so we can answer those questions a little bit more holistically. So that is one of the fundamental goals of the center, is to bring individuals together and then work in unison.
Is there ever any resistance on the part of older folks to participate in studies because they fear that they are being labeled as old if they are being studied as a subject who's in that category?
I think quite the contrary, really. A lot of individuals are really excited to come back to campus and get engaged in scientific studies. You clearly have to be careful. You know, you don't advertise we're looking for older individuals, because people may feel labeled by things like that.
Seasoned. Let's go with the word seasoned.
That's
yes.
That's an excellent word. I should write that down. But yeah, I think it's the opposite. Individuals are really excited about, again, telling their story about when they were younger, helping science and helping others within the aging framework.
At the gym I work out most mornings, there's a fellow who audits classes. He's retired, and he tells me how much he thoroughly enjoys coming back onto the UWM campus to learn about things that he never had time to learn about before. Mm-hmm. Is that another perhaps field that might be open to some study? You know, what's going on in the minds of these auditors? Because I think a lot of people don't realize, but you can audit for free after a certain age.
Yeah,
it's quite the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's multiple responses to that question. Absolutely, we're interested in studying why individuals want to learn more, as well as the campus and the center as well is fostering various educational opportunities, where they have the graduate certificate in applied gerontology. It's an 18-credit certificate, which is taking aging classes from a multitude of different disciplines, so understanding it from the psychology of aging, nursing, health sciences, social work, and things like that, and really tailoring that educational opportunity to the individual who's coming through the door. So if you come through the door and you're from psychology, you're going to look at the world a little differently than a nurse potentially. But it's really given an individualized and tailored kind of educational experience specific to aging. And then the center and campus is really looking at fostering that and growing that. So right now we have a graduate certificate that anyone can take, whether you're actually taking a degree on campus or whether you are coming from off campus and you are not enrolled in a degree program. But growing that to undergraduate education, growing that to doctoral education, continuing education opportunities, so we should actually go into the field and maybe deliver a class in the field at a various community senior center or something like that, as well as looking at pipelines coming through. So what do high schoolers know about gerontology and aging? Can we prepare them? So, again, exciting times from an educational perspective as well as from a research perspective.
And as you've described, it's so wonderful that a person of any generation, of any age, can come back and not only be a subject in some of these courses, but take the courses and keep growing and building their own understanding of their lives and the world that they live in.
Yeah, and one of the classes that we're right now really excited about developing, it's an undergraduate class, and it's a class that would actually we classify as an immersion class. It would be taught in the community, so students would register for on campus. They would actually have to go into a community setting to take the class, and they will be sat next to somebody who may be 75 years of age. So that kind of fostering is just going to be a tremendous wealth, I think, of information. And I'm really excited to see that get off the ground.
Scott, we wish you the very best. Congratulations on the launch of the center. And we'll have you back on as we see the results of these scientists working together on campus.
I would love to, and my pleasure. Thank you.
Scott Strath, the interim director of the Center for Aging and Translational Research, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.